evening, and welcome once again to Crystal Silence League Hour. I'm John St. Germain, your host, and tonight I'm very excited about our show. I'm also excited here at Castle St. Germain, located in Knoxville, Tennessee. It's the end of December, and we're around 50 degrees here. I believe it's the end times. We have omens and signs and portents, I believe, because Figaro, the ethereal cat, is telling me that it's the end of days, so who would have thought the end of days would have been so balmy and pleasant? However, we're going to plug on with the show. This is the last show of the year. And for this show, we're going to talk about the heavenly states. We're going to talk about what the Buddhists call the Brahmaviras. These are called the blessed states or the heavenly states. We're going to go into new thought a little bit more. We're going to talk about new thought. And we're going to talk about luck. We're going to talk about how to improve your luck. And we're going to talk about putting the past behind us and enter the new year just as clean as a newborn babe. So stick around, grab your crystal balls, warm them up, and get ready. We're back. John St. Germain here, and as you know, this is the Crystal Silence League Hour, and we are the Crystal Silence League. And for those of you new listeners, we're an online prayer service that was founded in or around 1917 by Claude Alexander Conlon, and it is grounded in New Thought theory. And he founded this to provide prayer and affirmative thought for people who needed it, and it was revived just a couple of years ago, just a few years ago, as an online service. And you're allowed to come to, you're encouraged, in fact, to come to the website, www.crystalsilenceleague.org, and post prayers if you're in need of prayer and positive affirmation. And the many members will pray for you, as well as the pastors, of which I am one. And it's customary on the show to start the show by reading some of the prayers, and for all of us listening, to send the people in need positive thoughts and prayers. And so let's begin. And our first prayer is prayer ID number 33340, DB. And DB asks that we please uphold JT in prayer, that he may build a life for himself and conquer the loneliness and depression and the rejection and abuse by his parents. We do send JT positive thoughts and prayers that he recover from the situation. Prayer ID 33338LJ. he prays that JN comes back in a loving relationship and a loving home, and that she be protected while she's in New Orleans. Prayer number 33337HK. She prays that her man gets New Year's Eve off so that they are together. May that happen as well. Prayer ID number 33336AG. She prays that E realizes what he has done and encourages him to apologize and a healing for their relationship. We have prayer number 33335 EB. Please pray that Slim calls in the next few minutes. Well, I hope that does happen. I hope it did happen. Prayer number 33333 KD. Please pray that Jay will quickly get an official offer to the program that he is applying for. Prayer ID 33331BR. Please, please, please help his partner beat crystal meth addiction, a truly terrible thing. Please may he be cleaned and healed of this addiction. Prayer ID number 33330AA. She needs help with cash. Needs help to pay for rent, and needs money very quickly, so please help her with prayers for cash flow. Prayer ID number 33329AT, another prayer for finances. Please help with a debt consolidation loan that will provide relief. Prayer ID number 33328AA, another financial breakthrough is required. Needs financial breakthrough to remove the obstacles. Please remove all obstacles that seems to have her stuck in her finances. Prayer ID number 33327 AM. Please pray for her sick cat. Her cat, M, needs to go into surgery, and she's very worried. May her cat be healed. Prayer ID number 33326 CG. A general prayer request that she hear from E and that she wants to be friends again. Prayer ID number 33325 TCC. A prayer for health, that she's going through a rough time with anxiety and it's making her sick. May she have peace of mind. May she have health. May she have contentment. Prayer ID number 33324 ZB. It's been a year since her partner T apparently left. She still loves T, and she wishes that they could be together again. May healing occur, and may what's meant to happen between them. Prayer ID number 33323JM, who prays that what appears to be a curse be removed, and that bad luck would be removed, and that he lives happily and peacefully. May that be so. Prayer ID number 33322DM. She prays that her sister S relationship ends her relationship immediately, and has nothing to do with him. Apparently, this is not a good relationship. May that relationship be healed. Prayer ID number 33320TC. A very sad mood. A very sad period. May she be healed, may her spirits lift, and may her spirit be uplifted. Prayer ID number 33319SG. She's praying that her loved ones be able to travel to attend her wedding. May that be so. May all obstacles be removed. Prayer ID number 33318EB. Please pray that her father brings the money that she needs. Prayer ID number 33317EK. She prays for physical and emotional healing for her daughter, Kay. Please, prayer number 33316CB, prayer for herself. She needs to find her joyful spirit. She needs to find herself. May she be happy and loved. Prayer ID number 33315KCL. She's having health issues, and please may God heal her of all the things that are causing her health problems right now. Prayer ID number 33314JR. May the family be healed. There's terrible family issues going on, and may the family be healed of the issues and the conflict that's going on. Prayer ID number 33313EP. They just had a recent loss in the family, and may they be lifted up into the spirit. And finally, prayer ID number 33312SF. May they gain gainful employment so that they can leave a very negative relationship. May these prayers be answered, and may the people enjoy peace and prosperity, and may they enjoy the happiness they deserve. Tonight's show I'm very excited about. We're going to look into the roots of the origins of the Crystal Silence League, which, of course, is founded in New Thought Theory. And I actually got a few emails that prompted this. People said, what is this New Thought Theory? And, you know, what's it all about? And, of course, today's probably biggest proponent of New Thought Theory is the Church of Divine Science and Unity. And I'll tell you that I studied divine science a lot. I was going to get ordained in the church, but you have to spend a lot of money to get that. And I'll tell you that there's an author, Joel Goldsmith, who's very popular now, who has been incorporating Christian Science into New Thought as well. And there was a time when I think Mary Baker Eddy was actually a student of Phineas Quimby, who's attributed as being the creator of, or a major founder of New Thought Theory. So Christian Science is sometimes seen as a spinoff, except Christian Science is theistic, is monotheistic. And New Thought Theory, I'll give you some background of it. Well, let's just get at the beginning. New Thought Movement was based on the ideas of a man named Phineas Quimby, who lived at the end of the 19th century, during the middle, I guess, of the 19th century. He was a mesmerist, and mesmerism was the forerunner of modern hypnosis. And mesmerism believed that there was, Franz Anton Mesmer believed that there was a magnetic fluid that could flow from one person to another, and that you could control people with this. Mesmer was, quote-unquote, exposed as a charlatan, although a lot of Mesmer's theories have gained some validation these days, that there does seem to be a type of energy that can be transferred from one person to another through force of concentration and will. We call this PK, psychokinesis. So the idea is not that far off. And so Quimby experimented with mesmerism and actually wrote a number of treatises on it about his experiments of controlling people by force of will. From there, he arrived at the tenets of New Thought, which is sometimes called religious science and other things. And there are some basic movement, some basic ideas there. Sometimes it's called higher thought because there's an idea of an infinite intelligence that's everywhere, the idea that there's spirit everywhere. And the totality of all living things creates this consciousness, and that the basic nature of humanity is a divine nature, that basically we're divine, that our basic nature is a divine nature. And that this nature is a powerful force for good, and that the reason people get sick is because of wrong thinking, that there are wrong beliefs that corrupt our basic nature, and that right thinking, the closer you are to right thinking, the healthier you are, not only in mind but in body. And this, of course, led to the idea that mental states manifest in daily life. So New Thought is not necessarily monotheistic. It doesn't believe that in a specific religion, although Quimby talks a lot of God, and there's a lot of reference to the four Gospels as source. It embraces the universal spirituality, and the tenets are not necessarily drawn from Christianity, although Christ is often quoted as a New Thought thinker. And I think Quimby wanted to return to early Christianity, not the type of packaged Christianity that actually comes with it. He believed in mind cure, the thought of mind cure, that mind can cure everything. Now, is this true? Is it true that by the power of the mind we can cure physical illness? Well, we do know that attitude has a lot to do with health. We know that people can recover faster if their attitude is positive. So we know that there is at least a component that mind and body work together, that there is a component to healing. I don't know. I can't give you an answer there. I know that you, I do know that you can get better if your attitude is better. I do know, I have a belief that if you take a person who is mentally, spiritually, or physically ill and put them in a healthy and supportive environment, the body and the mind seem to want to get better. There's an ingrained healing mechanism that we seem to have. I also think, though, that sometimes you're born with something. You're just born with something, and you can't. That's just what you have. For instance, if you're born with a missing limb, I don't think you can regrow a limb, but maybe I'm limiting the scope of the human mind. So we're looking at basically a mind cure movement, and I'm going to tell you that if you look in New Thought literature, there's a phrase that keeps coming up. And this phrase should start to ring a bell with you. And this phrase is going into the silence. And you'll see this in Florence Scovel Shinn's books. You'll see it in many of the New Thought writers, going into the silence. And so we have Crystal Silence League, founded by Claude Alexander Conlon, who we know was a proponent of New Thought. He mentions New Thought. He mentions it quite often in the books that we use. And so I suggest strongly, if you're reading the books of Mr. Conlon, that you look into New Thought. And I'm going to tell you that going into the silence means a contemplation of the mind, where you rise above the chatter and you place your consciousness in spirit. You contemplate spirit, your higher self, basically. You place your mind. It's not as I originally thought when I first started reading this years ago, trying to make your mind quiet. That's almost impossible. You can't do it. A lot of people think meditation is making the mind quiet, but it really isn't. This is a state of contemplation. You go into the silence, which means you're quiet. And it's another word, I think, for meditation. And meditation is silent because it's still. You go into stillness. And that is as opposed to the usual chatter and debate that the mind usually engages in. And what I mean by that is when you're dealing with reality, you're almost always weighing and balancing, comparing this versus that, right? Good versus evil, choice versus this. You're balancing and weighing almost always. Should I do this? Should I do that? and meditation is not that. Meditation is contemplation of a specific object of focus. And so there is a difference between going into the silence and walking around in the world and looking at things and focusing on them. For instance, you go to the store and you're looking, should I get that apple or this apple? You can be very focused on that, but that's not contemplation. That is not meditative contemplation. That's not meditative absorption. So going into the silence doesn't mean making the mind a blank. And if you focus, for instance, on the thought of goodness, you're conscious that you're focusing on goodness. So there is that dichotomy. You're separating thought of goodness. You're comparing goodness to evil. So you see, that is not going into the silence. Going into the silence would be entering the actual consciousness of goodness. Can you make the distinction? Can you make that distinction? Rather than using goodness as an object of meditation, you actually enter the consciousness of goodness. You enter the spirit. You become that thought. This is the difference, as I can understand it from New Thought, of entering the silence. And this is what we work with when we're doing the crystal projection. We enter the silence. So you don't think goodness, 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 goodness. You enter the very concept of goodness. And this is a very exciting concept. I want to tell you that this is very similar, and not surprisingly, because New Thought actually integrated many world religions, many ideas from other world religions, including Hinduism and Buddhism. And I'm going to tell you that there is a very key component of Buddhism called the Brahmaviras. And maybe some of you, or the Brahmaviharas or the Brahmaviras, and maybe some of you even know about this, and we're going to talk about those in just a minute. But I have some very good news for you. I'm doing some online research. I'm going to tell you that there's a website called sacredtexts.com, the sacredtexts.com, and there's a hyphen between sacred and texts. And there's a whole section devoted to New Thought. And there are many, many, many free books there. One of which is the book I talk about quite a bit, Florence Scovel Shinn, The Game of Life and How to Play It. And I want to tell you that there is quite a bit of discussion. She talks about going into the silence. And she also talks about the power of the word, which I think we've also spoken of. And this is a book that affected me greatly when I was a young man. I was, I think, 13 or 14. I've talked about this when I came across The Game of Life and How to Play It. And I want to tell you a little bit about this. Let's digress just a minute about the power of the word. And I'm going to read this to you, just something that's right here. this is Florence Scovel Shinn from The Game of Life and How to Play It. The person knowing the power of the word becomes very careful of his conversation. He is only to watch the reaction of his words to know that they do not return void. Through his spoken word, man is continually making laws for himself. I knew a man who said, "I always miss a car. It invariably pulls out just as I arrive." His daughter said, "I always catch a car. It's sure to come just as I get there." This occurred for years. Each had made a separate law for himself, one of failure, one of success. This is the psychology of superstitions. I'll repeat that. This is the psychology of superstitions. And she goes on to talk about reliance on lucky charms and things. Now, I'm going to... there's another chapter down here I wanted to... I have a friend who said nothing can induce her to walk under a ladder. I said, if you're afraid, you're giving into a belief of two powers, good and evil, instead of one. As God is absolute, there can be no opposing power unless man makes the false of evil for himself. To show you belief in only one power, God, and that there is no power in reality and evil, walk under the next ladder you see. Soon after, she went to her bank. She wished to open her box in the safety deposit vault, and there stood a ladder in her pathway. It was impossible to reach the box without passing under the ladder. She quailed with fear and turned back. She could not face the lion on her pathway. However, when she reached the street, my words rang in her ear, and she decided to return and walk under it. It was a big moment in her life, for ladders had held her in bondage for years. She retraced her steps to the vault, and the ladder was no longer there. This so often happens. If one is willing to do a thing he is afraid to do, he does not have to. It is the law of non-resistance, which is so little understood. Let me tell you about the power of the word. How many times, and I'm going to tell you this happens quite a bit in my practice, people say, why do these things happen to me? Why do they always happen to me? I am the unluckiest person in the world. And this is there are words for this, self-fulfilling prophecy, beating yourself up, we call it in the South. There are people who always beat themselves up, we call it. I'm no good, I'm just no good, I'm no good at all, I'll never amount to anything. And this is the power of the Word. And I can't tell you how often I hear this. Why do these things happen to me? Well, because you're calling it down upon yourself. And later on, we're going to talk about luck, and I'm going to give you four rules to bring all the luck you can handle. But what you don't do is call luck, bad luck, down upon you. This is just a terrible thing to do. This is the power of the Word, and the Word is very powerful. Words are strong, and if you don't believe me, just try it for a week. Just start saying, "I'm the unluckiest person in the world," and just, you know, I double dog dare you to do that. I wouldn't do it. And do you know how many people call and say, you know, I just always attract the worst type of person. I always attract the worst type of man for me, the worst type of woman for me. I just always do this. I'm so unlucky in love. Well, you know, I guess you are. You've laid that upon your doorstep. The power of the Word. Just do not underestimate that. I'll tell you that this had a tremendous amount of power on me because I grew up in a household where evil words were bandied about, just as a matter of course, you know, F you, screw you, damn you, God damn you, things like this, constantly. And we did live in a type of purgatory. So we're going to talk about now the other end of the stick, the Brahma Viharas. And in the Pali and Sanskrit, this is called the heavenly states, the highest states, the superior states. And in Buddhism, you are encouraged to live there, to dwell there, to abide there in these heavenly states. And I'm going to tell you what they are. There's four of them, and they are sometimes called the four divine abodes. That's what we used to call them. And they are metta, karuna, mudita, and upekkha. And that doesn't do you a bit of good unless you speak Pali or Sanskrit. But metta is loving-kindness. Last week, I think I read the Metta Sutta, loving-kindness. Karuna is compassion. Often you hear those paired together, metta karuna, loving-kindness and compassion. The third one is mudita, which is a sympathetic joy, and I'm going to dwell on that one for a long time. And upekkha is equanimity, and I want to take those in order. Metta is loving-kindness. Now, this is not passionate love. This is not this love that burns you up. This is sort of a gentle kind of a friendly affection for yourself and others. It's a gentle affection. It's loving kindness, and as it's described in the Metta Sutta, it says a mother loves her only child, and you feel this for yourself and others. And it's an open heart. It includes a wish for everyone to be happy and at peace. It does not have clinging. It doesn't have attachment, and it doesn't have control. You see. Now, karuna, which is compassion, it includes empathy, to see the other person's position and to care about them. But I want to tell you, compassion is a very misunderstood emotion. Sometimes people who practice Buddhism very intently are not seen as particularly compassionate, because the Buddhist concept of compassion is free of sentimentality, and it's free of aversion. And often, aversion and sentimentality are mistaken for compassion. And let me tell you what that means. You ever hear this? Oh, I can't stand to see someone suffer. Oh, I hate to see animals suffer. You see, that's aversion. That's not compassion. Because that is a self-centered type of feeling. That is aversion. That is you feeling pain over somebody else. Now, when we talk about sympathetic joy, we'll dwell on that more, but aversion is not compassion. Compassion is the wish for other people and all sentient beings to be free. Free of suffering, not suffering for them. This is a form of narcissism. And you think that you're being compassionate and empathetic when you suffer for someone else, but it's foolishness. It's foolishness, and it is not compassion, and it does no good. It does no good to multiply suffering. One person is suffering. One sentient being is suffering. What good does it do for two sentient beings to suffer? So aversion is not compassion. Sentimentality becomes a little bit more difficult, and this is where a lot of people have problems. Sentimentality are projected beliefs about compassion, that compassion should conform to expectations. For instance, and this is going to be hard, I want to warn you, here's a belief. Little children should not get sick. Little children should not have painful diseases. Little children and little puppy dogs, and see, this is, it's even hard for me to say it, should not suffer. And if you think about it, why not? In the law of nature, the way nature is, why should age have anything to do with the natural order of things or karma? Why does karma wait until you're 18 to manifest, for instance? Why would karma hold off the fruiting of karma from past lives, from whatever, wait until you're 18 to manifest, or until you're 16 to manifest, or until you're 8 to manifest, or until you're 3 hours old to manifest? Why would the natural order of things, natural laws? Karma is not the only thing that manifests in Buddhism. There are five orders. You should look these up, the five Nikayas. There's seed law and cyclic law and natural law and karma. There's five reasons things happen. None of them depend on sentimentality. So sentimentality is not compassion. But compassion is a wish. It's a desire for things to not suffer and to do what you can. To do what you can for people. You have to see the other person's position, and you care about them, and you care for them, and you want them to be happy. So it doesn't do you any good to fret and rail about the way things are. Again, that just multiplies suffering. And you see, this is what we said earlier about Buddhism, the way things are and the way you want them to be. You can't change the things the way things are. So that is a very difficult thing. Now, I'll tell you some more about this later. Mudita, which is sympathetic joy. Now, this is the ability to be happy when you see others happy. And that just seems, okay, that's good, but this is the hardest of them all. You know how if you have children, you know, you see your child achieve something and you're so happy with them, that they go, oh, Mom, look what I drew. Look, Mom, I won a blue ribbon. You go, oh, I'm so happy for you. That's feeling that for other people. Like someone at work gets a promotion and they're so happy, you're happy for them, even though you wanted that promotion. Somebody, oh, look, my boyfriend just proposed to me, and they're happy, you're happy for them. You share that joy. Somebody just won the lottery. Oh, my God, I won $1 million. And you share that happiness with them. This is sympathetic or empathetic joy, and you feel that for everyone. And it's easy for some people. It's easy to feel that with people you love and people you like, but what about people you don't care that much about? This is when you truly experience the Brahma Vihara. If you can truly experience that for everyone, even the people you don't like, you're a Brahma. You're a noble one. You've entered a noble state. That's why it said you abide in these states. You live there. If you can achieve through meditation and through cultivation that you abide in these states, this is what it says. This is what it says. The Buddha says you're guaranteed happiness. You're guaranteed. You're guaranteed. It says right there in the fine print. You're guaranteed happiness if you can abide in these states, in these four states. If you can cultivate through meditation the Brahma Viharas and abide there, you are guaranteed happiness in this life and the next one. No matter what. No matter what. If you can cultivate these. This means that this one, sympathetic joy, mudita, is the exact opposite of envy. It is the exact opposite of envy. So when that person gets the position instead of you, the one you wanted, or that person, you know, somebody gets the partner, the romantic partner that you really wanted, they marry the person you wanted, you don't eat your heart out with envy. You're happy for them, and you're truly happy for them. You see how hard that one is? Someone that did you wrong, you see them successful, and you don't, you know, you don't sit there and stab pins in a voodoo doll. You say, good for you. You know, good for you. I'm happy for you. That is a hard one. That is a hard one. Their joy becomes your joy, and you have reduced the amount of suffering in the universe. That's a hard one. That's harder than understanding compassion. Seeing another being suffer and comforting that person without being emotionally involved, without aversion, without hating it, you know, without your own heart breaking. Upekkha, equanimity, is a balanced state of mind. It's emotional equilibrium. It's a middle way. You don't go to extremes emotionally. You don't get too, you don't experience euphoria and despair. That's the best way I can put it. We also looked at a key phrase. One of those that just hit me really hard. In the Dhammapada, it says, as a rock remains unmoved by the wind and rain, so do the wise remain unmoved by praise and blame. And it says elsewhere, hot and cold, pain and pleasure, joy, happiness, and sadness, these things are all the same. If you understand this, you will never be moved. So, if you understand that these are all states of mind, and you avoid the extremes, you avoid euphoria, you avoid despair, and you keep a calmness. This is the fourth of the Brahma-Viharas. So, these four divine states are the points where you exist. Now we go back to New Thought. Enter the silence. Enter the states of spirit. And you see a similarity. You see how they incorporated these concepts of goodness, of compassion, of joy and happiness, and enter the silence. I will tell you that there are enemies. There are charts. If you look in the Abhidharma, the Comprehensive Manual of Abhidharma by Bhikkhu Bodhi, that's advanced Buddhist psychology. If you want to freak your mind out, start reading of that. There are things called near enemies and far enemies of the Brahma-Viharas. So what you do is you replace the unwholesome states of mind with the wholesome states. So what you would think that the enemy of metta, loving kindness, would be hate, but it isn't. It's selfish affection. That's when you love somebody because it makes you feel good to be with them. The far enemy is the painful ill will, the hate. The far enemy is hate. Hate is the far enemy, because that's easy to spot. You know, if you hate something, you go, okay, well, that's easy. But that selfish affection, that selfish attachment, when you're with somebody, and I believe that the modern term for that is codependency. The karuna, compassion, the far enemy is cruelty. I mean, it's easy to see the opposite, that you're mean, right? But the near enemy is pity. Remember sentimentality? The near enemy of compassion is pity, because it puts you in a selfish frame of mind. Now, sympathetic joy, of course, the far enemy is envy, because it's easy to see that, right? But the near enemy is exuberance, euphoria. You know, shaking your hand. Oh my goodness! Congratulations! Aren't you just the man? You are the good man. Aren't you just the man? Because, you know, once again, that's just fake. It's just not real. But what about equanimity, the middle path? You know, that, of course, the far enemy of that is attachment, over attachment to things, going to the extremes, being grasping at the despair, clinging to it. You know, oh my God, it's the end of the world. Oh my God, it's the end of the world. And oh my God, I'm so happy. You know, this is just the greatest thing ever. But the near enemy is indifference. You know, the opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference. And the opposite of hate is not love, it's indifference. It's not caring. The near enemy is just not caring. Not having any type of feeling. So this is these are the mindsets that we just really don't want to encourage when we see this type of clinging to a relationship that we have to have it. And, you know, you can be codependent for a lot of things. We're not even talking. You can be codependent for cats, dogs, children, parents, food, sex, internet forums. You see, your mind latches onto this stuff, and these are not the states you want to enter. When you enter the silence, that's not where you want to go. That's not where you want to go. And unfortunately, I think a lot of the projections that we put out there go into these very spots. Just some things to think about and dwell on that, because now we're getting close to. We hit the pathway point. Codependency for internet forums. That is funny, isn't it, Catherine? Let us have a word from our sponsor while I wet my whistle here.
You are listening to another fine production of the LMC Radio Network, whose art and information may be found on its webcast shows. The LMC Radio Network is a community radio alliance of metaphysical, spiritual, inspirational, and poetical justice broadcasters spanning a wide range of topics. Tune in Sundays for the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali. It features panel discussions on traditional African-American hoodoo spellcasting with members of the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, plus free readings and magical rootwork advice for live call-in clients. This is the longest-running Conjure show on radio and may be heard from 3 o'clock to 4:30 Pacific Time Sunday afternoons. On Mondays, get ready for Candelo's Corner, starring Candelo Cambisa and Ancestor Healing. This is the voice of authentic Cuban Palo and Dominican Sanse in the United States, welcoming special guests representing the entire range of African traditional and diasporic traditional religions. You can hear Candela's Corner Monday evenings from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. On Tuesdays, a pair of outstanding hosts point the way to essential values. First, on the Crystal Silence League Hour, John St. Germain provides spiritual guidance in the practical use of crystals and crystal balls for the development of mental concentration, mind power, divination, and telepathic communication. His show airs Tuesday evenings from 5 to 6 o'clock Pacific Time. Once you have your bearings, engage in activism and social justice in the streets with Beverly Smith. Beverly brings listeners front page reports on the ongoing struggle for racial, gender, and social justice, shedding much light on civil and social rights issues. Her cry for freedom begins at 6 p.m. Pacific Time and inspires us for 1 hour. On Wednesdays, Andrea Weston's Liquid Libations pour forth to bless us with poetry, short stories, and spoken word performances. If you are a poet or someone who simply enjoys the beauty and power of words, then Liquid Libations welcomes your participation. Call in and read your work. Listen for Liquid Libations on Wednesdays from 5 to 6:30 Pacific Time. And on Thursdays, from deep in the heart of Texas, where the stars at night are big and bright, there to school you so no one can fool you, it's the Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield. In a variety show laced with country wit and biblical wisdom, the silver-tongued professor shares his knowledge of roots and delivers the lucky numbers. From 6 to 7:30 Pacific Time, there's no end to the surprises. All the shows on the LMC Radio Network are sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, located in beautiful Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. Add 3 hours for Eastern. Tax and license may apply. Train departure times and Burma shave signs subject to change without notice. LMC.
And we're back. We were talking about purifying your mind and having just a very whitewashed mind so that you can enter the Brahmaviras and enter the silence with a pure mind. We've talked about this before, purifying your intent before you project it out there. And so let's talk about this. Why do you want to do this? Well, we understand and we believe that internal states are manifested externally, you know, that what you think will happen, what you speak will happen. Is this for real? Well, yes. Yes, it is. And generations of people who believe in the law of attraction tend to testify that it does. I remember a time I went through a lot of things. I was an advocate, a fan of Brian Tracy. You know, Brian Tracy is a sales guy, and he does law of attraction stuff. And when I was starting up my business, I bought a lot of his stuff. And he tells a story about a young man who he had lost everything. He was a businessman. He lost everything, and he went to a park in despair with a bottle of liquor. And he ran into this old man, and the old man said, "What's wrong, son?" And he told him he told him what happened. He said, "You know, I've lost my business. My wife and my family depend on me, and I'm bankrupt. I have nothing." And the old man said, "Well, you know," he said, "you seem like a good man with good ideas. I want to front you some money." He said, "You know, I'm a very wealthy man, and I'm going to front you some money. I'm going to write you a check for $100,000. He goes, "What? You can't do that." He goes, "Yes, I do, because I believe in you. And at the end of 1 year, meet me back here and pay me back." And so the guy got his checkbook out and wrote him $100,000. And so the young man took it home, and he said, "You know what? I'm just going to keep this as reserve money. I'm not going to cash this. I want to keep it as reserve money." And he renewed his efforts. And by the end of the year, he had rebuilt his business, and he had $200,000 in the bank. Now, this is a true story, according to Brian Tracy. And so he went back and a year later to pay the guy back, and he wasn't there. Well, you know, the man's address was on the check. So he went and knocked on the door, and the man's daughter answered the door. And he said, "Well, yes, I just wanted to thank your father for writing me this check." She goes, "Oh, gosh, you didn't try to cash that, did you?" He goes, "Oh, no, no. In fact, I just want to give it back to him." He goes, "Well, you know, he's not quite right in the head, and he goes around writing these checks to everybody, and you know he doesn't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of, and I'm just really sorry that he did this, and you know I hope that you know if you have any bank fees, I'll be glad to pay him." And the young man said, "Oh gosh, no, actually I didn't try to cash it, but I'd like to thank him for writing this for me." And so you see, the moral of the story is belief. If you believe in yourself, you can do some amazing things. And if the young man had gone and cashed that check, this story would have had a very different ending, I think. The other moral of the story is that crazy old guys can sometimes be really cool. For instance, sometimes they get radio shows. Hey? So let's talk about the past. It is a good story, isn't it? So the past. The past is like a chain around your neck sometimes. And I do think that there's a real problem with that, because you tend to think, if you've had a bad past, you know, like this guy, "Why does everything happen to me?" You could write a book with that as a title, and maybe somebody has. You carry a history. And, you know, Jiddu Krishnamurti wrote quite a bit about that conditioning of the past. He said, "Can you approach the present without the conditioning of the past?" And, man, that's sometimes really hard. So, can you? I don't know, because it's very hard for me. I'll tell you that I was talking many years ago. I'd studied to take the Buddhist robe. I was going to be a monk, a bhikkhu. And there was an old guy named Bhikkhu Ananda. We called him Bhikkhu Andy. He was this old, crusty guy who his face was as wrinkled and weathered as he looked like a Sharpei, and he had half his teeth missing. You could tell this guy had lived hard on the street. He was American, and he looks like one of those old guys you see at 12-step meetings who were a hardcore alcoholic, been on the streets and got sober. And now he was a hardcore sober guy. And I suspect that was in his past. Bhikkhu Andy was cool. Old, cool guy. And I loved him. I just loved him. And he took me under his wing, and we had some hardcore talks. And I remember one time I was talking to Bhikkhu Andy, and I was telling him how much I regretted some of the things I did in my past. Now, I was a younger man. I was maybe 42, I guess. And And I said, I truly regretted it. And I mentioned that I wanted to make some kind of act of redemption, some big act of redemption. And he leaned over, and he just kind of smiled with those nasty teeth. You know, he had those big yellow old street guy teeth. You know, there were about five of them left, and he just smiled at me. He said, John, you're as full of shit as a Christmas goose. And you know, people who don't know much about Buddhist monks and stuff, they're surprised they talk like that. And they go, a Buddhist monk? Oh, my God. But, you know, you ought to hear how, if you read the Buddha Sutras, you know, Buddha cussed people out sometimes. He'd go, oh, you foolish man. Oh, you fool. You idiot. You're so foolish. Your mother should have never given birth to you. You know, Buddha could get salty. But he said, you're as full of shit as a Christmas goose. And then he just laughed. And I said, no, really, I want to make up for some of the stuff I've done. And he said, what's the worst thing you ever did? You know, I told him, and of course, you know, when you're in that kind of mood, you know, when, like I say, when you're in the South beating yourself up, you know, I was reduced to tears. And, you know, remorse and all that sort of thing, you know, like, oh, you know, I'm lower than the worm, you know, that sort of thing. And you know, he said, God, he said, that's really nothing. And he said, so you think if you do this one act of redemption or if you become a monk or if you do this sort of thing, that you're going to feel better? And I thought about it, and I just keep thinking. I thought more. I said, you know, no, because you don't. You really don't. No matter how much good you do, it cannot remove the conditioning of the past. You can't erase it. And you cannot. So the conditioning of the past is always going to be there. It makes you what you are today. The past created you. And you cannot erase it. And you can't make it better. You can't make it go away. And that's why he said, you know, I was full of crap. And he was right. What would this act of redemption do? It wouldn't redeem me. There is no act of redemption. And I think this is why the idea of a redeemer is so attractive, someone that forgives you. And, of course, you have to forgive yourself for your wrongdoing. You just have to say, you know, I messed up. You know, I did something, and let it go. So what I'm going to tell you now is that there is a way to do this. Write it all down on a piece of paper, take it to a graveyard and bury it and give it a funeral and then walk away from it and just say, you know, you're dead, bye. Because the past, you know, that's a place you don't want to be anymore. You got to live in the present and let it go. Live in the present and let it go. The past is a foreign country. It's gone. You're not even the same person. That's somebody else that lived in the past. And, you know, that's just somebody you just don't want to go visit and have any more conversations with. You know, don't talk to the person you were back then. You and that person have nothing to say to each other. Just let it go. And, yeah, Bhikkhu Andy, he got to the point of the matter. That person back then, full of crap. That person back then was full of crap. Doesn't know what you know now. So let it go. You don't want to bring that into silence. You don't want to bring the past into the silence. You want to stay in the present moment. Well, we are at a point where we have about 5 minutes to go. And what I'd like to do is give you a little good luck charm to carry into the new year. And it's a fairly easy thing to do. You need three stones. You need a tiger's eye, a turquoise, and a piece of adventurine. Rub a little lucky mojo fast luck powder on that. Carry it in a flannel bag with you. Get you a nice little surge of luck to carry into the new year. And that's a very good thing to do. Now, I told you, I promised you that I would tell you the four factors of luck. I'm going to tell you that if you walk around and say you have the worst luck ever, you're going to have it. But I'm going to tell you the four factors of luck. I had a friend who had very bad luck. His business was terrible. Oh, by the way, in that little bag, you can put a piece of Irish moss and, you know, a lucky buckeye, silver dime, you know, attract a little lucky money while you're at it. He had terrible luck. He was a good businessman and everything, had terrible luck, and he wanted me to do a hypnotic induction with him to help him be more lucky. And I thought about it. I said, just what is luck? And I condensed it. This is my thinking. I condensed it down to four factors. What makes a person lucky and what makes another person unlucky? And it's a matter of decisions, the decisions you make. Because I changed my luck. I did. My luck was bad. I changed it to good. But how did I do it? And I'm going to tell you that. So I'm going to do this very much like a hypnotic induction. I'm just going to play some gentle music and talk to you and do it like I did it for him. I'm not going to do a meditation, really, just kind of a soft music and talking. But I want to give you that. Oh, the third stone was adventurine, Mr. Jellyfish. It's tiger's eye, turquoise, and adventurine. These are luck attraction stones. So let me just play a little music here. And I'm going to tell you about the four factors of luck and also how you can do this. And you should write this down or download the show and listen to it and write this down, because you want to repeat this to yourself every day until it becomes ingrained into your mind. This is like the old affirmations, the daily affirmations. But number one, luck is a product of planning. So you repeat to yourself, I will plan all my actions, the small and the large ones, the conscious and unconscious ones, to lead toward luck and success. I will program my mind to plan all my actions, small and large, conscious and unconscious, to lead toward luck and success. And number two, luck follows luck. So I will surround myself with successful and lucky people and repel away from myself the negative and the unlucky and the unsuccessful people and wish them well. Number three, luck is a matter of timing. I will be in the right place at the right time, and I will be sensitive to opportunities to maximize my luck and success. Luck is a matter of timing. I'll be in the right place at the right time. I'll be sensitive to opportunities to maximize my luck and my success. And number four, there's a storehouse of luck waiting for me in the universe. I'm ready to claim it. It's mine. There is a storehouse of luck waiting for me in the universe. I'm ready to claim it. And now, this is the key to this. I'm going to assign a color to every one of these. And every time you see this color, it's going to remind you and sink in these four affirmations. Every time you see the color, your mind is going to reaffirm this. So number one is red. When you see the color red, you'll remind yourself that luck is a product of planning, and you'll plan all your actions, small, large, conscious, and unconscious, to lead to success and luck. Number two is yellow. Luck follows luck, so you'll surround yourself with lucky and successful people. Number three is green. Luck is a matter of timing. You'll be in the right place at the right time. I'll be sensitive to opportunities to maximize my success. And number four is blue. Whenever you see the color blue, you'll be reminded of that big blue storehouse of luck waiting for you. All you have to do is open the doors and claim it. Red, planning. You make the good decisions. Every decision you make, small, large, conscious and unconscious, those decisions you make leads toward success. Two is yellow. Luck follows luck. Three is green. Luck is putting yourself in the right time at the right place. Four is blue. That's the big blue storehouse of luck. Remember this: red, yellow, green, and blue. Those are the four colors of your luck and success. Every time you see these, you'll be reminded of that. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening to the show tonight. I'm John St. James. We're down to the last few minutes. Do stay tuned with On the Streets with Beverly Smith, one of my favorite shows. And I hope you've enjoyed the program tonight about the heavenly abodes. And I do hope you've red, yellow, and green are the colors of the Missionary Independent Spiritual Church, certainly. And ladies and gentlemen, and felines and canines, and all the others that listen to the show tonight, much love, much peace, much compassion, and much equanimity to all of you. And good night.